Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Microsoft Teams is helping a bicycle company reinvent the way that they work.
We make low-maintenance bicycles for everyday riders. Once the pandemic hit, we had nobody coming into the showroom. So we started doing virtual visits via Microsoft Teams.
We're able to see two or threefold the amount of customers we used to be able to see. All of a sudden, we could open up our showroom to customers around the world. I really think it's going to set a standard for retail moving forward.
Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
We are back and we are live. Welcome to Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, the co-host and analyst, as always, the more important guys, Chris Olson, Joe Cahoot. I believe your last name is Joe. I've never actually tried to say your last name. Did I get that right?
No, you didn't. But don't worry. Most everybody does.
My last name is Rough. That's why I go by DFS.
That's why I go by Sun Tzu.
So it is Sun Tzu on Twitter, at Real Chris Olson, and we are talking Tough 27 finale and UFC 226. It is the 2018 International Fight Week. And you know what? Because we really just got all the Tough 27 card released, we're going to run through, before we get to the promos or any of that stuff, we're going to run through the Tough 27 card for DraftKings. I'm going to give you the matchups and the pricing. We're just going to give a one name answer for who we think is going to win the fight and a little bit more info at the end. So let's run through these so we can get to UFC 226. First up on the Tough 27 card, I almost read the wrong card. It is Oscar Pejota, 9,000, taking on Gerald Meerschaert, 7,200. I'll take Pejota. Chris?
Close fight, but I'm going with Meerschaert.
Man, I want to berate you, but we got to move on. Joe?
I will take the dog as well. Meerschaert.
Whoa. All right. Matt Bissett, 8,900. Steven Peterson, 7,300. I'll take the dog in this one. Peterson.
Well, now it's I who would like to berate you because I'm going with Bissett.
Joe?
I'm taking Peterson.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So, you know what? Almost everyone's been the odd man out. Let's see if we can get Joe to be the odd man out. As Tyler Diamond taking on Bryce Mitchell, I have Diamond.
Bryce Mitchell.
I will take Diamond.
Okay. All alone again. By the way, the pricing for that one, $8,400 for Diamond, $7,800 for Mitchell. John Gunther, $8,400. Alon Zuniga, $7,800. I'll take a nap rather than pick this fight, but I'll take Gunther for $8,400. Chris?
Gunther is basically a punching bag. I'm taking Zuniga.
Yeah, I have no strong opinion on this one. Joe?
I can't pick anybody who leads with his face, so I will take Zuniga.
Luis Violent Bob Ross Pena, 9,300, taking on Richie Smolin, 6,900. I'll take the Violent Artist. Chris?
I'm going with Bob Ross as well.
And I think we are in agreement on this fight. Make it a trifecta.
Right. I think that's the first one.
There we go. Montana De La Rosa, 8,500, taking on Rachel Ostovich. I noticed her last name isn't listed anymore, at least on DraftKings. It's usually Rachel Ostovich Perdome, but maybe she's single now. Who knows? Either way, I'm picking against her. I'm taking Montana De La Rosa, and I suspect it's a little bit of leverage there. Chris?
Yeah, I'm going Ostovich.
Of course.
Joe? Toss up fight, going for the one who looks better at weigh-ins. That's Ostovich.
Julian Marquez, 8,800, taking on Alessio Di Chirico, 7,400. Give me Di Chirico, the upset. Chris?
I agree. I'm taking Di Chirico.
I am taking the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I think it's going to be a lot more difficult a fight than people think.
It's going to be interesting. Barb Soccer Mom Honchak, 8,700, taking on Roxanne, I've been around forever, Matafari at 7,500. I'll take Honchak, I guess. Chris?
I'm going with the crime fighter. Give me Roxy.
I will take the happy warrior, Roxy.
Again, I don't have a strong opinion on that one. So, Alex Caceres, 8,300, taking on Martin Bravo, 7,900. I'll take Caceres in a close fight. Chris?
I actually think Martin Bravo lights him on fire. So there you go.
Joe?
Bruce Leroy by a wide margin.
You know, we would have had a really fun podcast if this was the podcast. We just
a lot. Wow, I really kind of want to talk about that one, but I guess we can't.
Hopefully we – you know, I have a feeling we're going to have a few of those on the 226. Into the Ultimate Fighter finale fights, which are really interesting and hard to pick just historically for me. We have Jay Cuccinello taking on – I should have his first name up. It is Joe Giannetti. I'll take – Giannetti to win. I don't think the heart gets Cuccinello by this time. Chris?
Giannetti pretty easily for me.
Giannetti very easily.
Mike Trezano, 7,600, taking on... Oh, I messed up that fight. Scratch that, guys. I combined two fights.
All right,
let's circle back. That is my fault. It is Brad Katona taking on Jay Cuccinello.
Cuccinello, yep.
Okay.
I have Katona in that one still at 8,600. Chris, still on Katona?
I have Katona, yes.
I have Katona as well.
And it's Joe Giannetti at 8,600 taking on Mike Trezano at 7,600. What threw me on that one is those two fights are priced exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I knew in my head it always adds up to 16,2. And either way, I still have Giannetti. I have both favorites.
Yeah, Chris? I have I'm sorry. So now I'm confused. So that fight is Trezano Giannetti?
Yes. Trezano Giannetti.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Final.
Right. Okay. I'm still going Giannetti as well. Right.
Oof. It's hard for me to pick. He's my homeboy, is Trezano. I think he's a better striker. I'm going to pick Trezano to get the upset.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, so, I like Giannetti against the other guy, but.
Yeah.
Match up in
our take that fight instead. It's a lot easier for the DraftKings.
And the main event, one that I really want to break down, but just don't have the time. Israel Adesanya, 8,200, taking on Brad Tavares, 8,000. I will take the Hawaiian Michael Bisping, as they said on half the battle. I really like that one, so I'll take Tavares. Chris,
with the caveat that we still don't know the severity of his foot injury, now it's going to affect him. I'll take Tavares.
Okay, well, I cannot pick someone who is a spokesperson for Life Alert. So I'm with Tavares as well. Just a little bit of trivia here is Santos weighed in at 185 as a potential replacement for Tavares in case he can't go.
That's right, yeah.
Well, that'll set DraftKings on fire. That'll be fun. Yeah. Let's wrap this one up. So I'll go first. We're just going to lead with our favorite high price fighter on the card and some dog value. You know what? Give me Oscar Pajota. I know you guys both picked against him. I really think he gets GM3 out of there. I don't think GM3 is that good. And for my upset pick, my favorite fighter priced below the midpoint at 8,100. Scrolling through, I will take Alessio Di Chirico.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. Is it me?
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my favorite fighter on the card is actually not that expensive, and it is Martin Bravo at 7,900. I like him to get an early stoppage here. And let's see if we're gonna pick a more expensive. I'll go Mapaset for 8,900.
Okay, I'm gonna go with Violent Bob. I think that is the surest finish on the card. Is Violent Bob, and then Tavares is a dog, so I'm going to go with Tavares as my dog play, although he's not a big dog, but I'm going to go with Tavares.
Fair enough, and that is tough 27 for DraftKings, guys. A little disclaimer I think we can all agree on. It's not a great DFS card. I know we love DFS MMA. It's why you're listening. Don't go nuts with your bankroll on this one. It is a funny card. GPPs leave a lot of money on the table, a lot of live dogs. Let's get into UFC 226. Again, you know, before we start, RotoWire MMA is what makes all these podcasts possible. If you're watching on YouTube, which hopefully you are watching this live, go ahead and type in the chat. If you're not, subscribe to this podcast on RotoWire MMA and watch us next time on YouTube. Go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all of RotoWire's usually paid content for all fantasy sports, season-long and daily. From baseball to basketball to obviously MMA, soccer, they have everything over there.
And their golf analyst. You got to follow their golf analyst. He's actually made me some money.
And a personal plug, Sun Tzu, for the RotoWire golf content. When don't you make money, Joe? I feel like you're rolling in it.
Trust me, I'm not. Like I said, when you have women in your life who don't work, yeah, you give more than you take in.
It goes very quickly.
Yes, it does.
And for all of us, I am at the DFS Sniper 1S on Twitter, at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu. Enough of the pleasantries. We had a bunch this week. Let's get to UFC 226, down to 11 fights as we lose Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega. I had my Hawaii shirt, you know, already. I was going to pick Holloway. I was feeling great about it. And the concussion symptoms, you know, best out to Max. That, to me, I think was the real main event. And these guys told me right before we jumped on, apparently – Cormier tripped over something the media day, I guess, or
at the ceremonial staring.
The
yeah.
Ceremonial yeah. Stare downs, and hopefully he's okay. Otherwise, this card is really in trouble. Like, what would be the main event at that point?
Well, did you hear the rumor floating around about potentially Edgar facing Jeremy Stephens for yet another one of the many interim titles?
I did hear that. I hope it doesn't happen.
God.
Let's let Frankie Edgar rest, please.
Yes.
Yes. Great.
So, anyway, we'll get to to that headline fight later. We start off with one that I think we all want to get through pretty quickly. Jamie Moyle, 9,200, taking on Emily Spitfire Whitmire at 7,000. They're both not good. Moyle is less not good. It's hard for me to pay the price, but she's in play for GPPs. I'd be surprised if Whitmire wins, but again, it's low-level MMA. But give me Jamie Moyle. We'll start with Joe.
So, look, I love both Jamie as a cool nickname. It's hard for me to get behind anyone that was bloodied up by Caitlin Curran. And if you look at that fight, yes, she won the decision, but that was arguably the closest fight that Caitlin Curran actually came to winning in the UFC. And we all know what she's doing right now. She's doing some like Sun Tropic commercials. I don't know. But anyway, I can't see the price, which I think is 9.2K. I can't see, you know, the minus 300 betting line. I am going to pick a slight upset I'm going to pick a upset in Whitmire. Although I'm not super confident, obviously. I just think that it's much closer a fight than negative 300. And I certainly would not be using a whole lot of Moyle at that price. So again, just going for an upset.
That's actually kind of how I feel about the main event, but a little foreshadowing, we will get there. Chris, who you got in this one?
I obviously feel the same way that, you know, Moyle shouldn't be 9,200, but I do think that she probably wins and might finish here. And I say that because, look, we know what Moyle wants to do, right? She needs to wrestle, and she needs to be successful at wrestling, because if she's not, then like her striking is pretty, you know, pretty rudimentary. She doesn't really find her range all that well. But I mean, look, Robertson found Whitmire's back, and she did it pretty easily. And ended up finishing with another submission. That was actually pretty slick. But I think that if Moyle is singularly minded here, I mean, she gets a lot of body trip takedowns, and I think she can find the back. Whitmire likes to rush in, and I think that's going to give Moyle some clinch opportunities. So, yeah, let me take Moyle here. I'll have a little bit of Moyle just in case she does finish with that submission, which I think is a possibility. But, yeah, overall, this is not a great DK fight, I don't think.
Next up, Dan, the Hangman Hooker, 8,500, taking on Gilbert Burns at 7,700. I want to pull up the odds for this fight because I feel like there was going to be some movement in this one. There has been a little bit. Hooker is down to being only a minus 120 favorite and at five dimes. Gilbert Burns plus 100, a little bit of odds value there. Burns, I think, is shaping up to be one of the more popular underdogs on this card. And I have to say, I think I agree with it. Hooker, for me, his only path to victory here is landing one of those knees. Unfortunately, Burns' wrestling is still developing, and he could eat one of those knees. But outside of that, I think Gilbert Burns has more power, clearly has the better BJJ. He just has to find a way to get this fight to the ground or, you know, land one of his not technical but powerful strikes. Overall, for the discount, I like Burns a fair amount here. Chris, we'll start with you for this one.
I also like Burns, but I think Hooker is at least semi-live here. I think that I think he's a smart fighter. I think we've seen him time and time again adjust to what his opponents are doing in the cage, and that's why we see some of those knees land in the first place, especially with Ross Pearson was ducking and rolling a lot, and the knee came up. But yeah, we saw in that the Jakar close fight that sometimes, you know, if the opponent's not engaging, he just doesn't do much. And I don't expect Burns not to engage, but I do think that if Hooker just hangs back and waits for his strikes, he could be in a little bit of trouble. We saw him finish that fight with a submission, so we know he's got sub skills. And we've also seen Gilbert Burns get hurt, rushing in too fast, getting clipped, and having to, you know, sort of resort to his wrestling as he had to do in his last fight. Against a late replacement who wasn't expected to give him any trouble at all. So I don't think Gilbert Burns is in zero danger here. I wouldn't put it completely past Hooker to land a big shot or catch him with a big counter that changes the course of the fight. But I agree with Sean overall that I think skill for skill, Gilbert Burns is better everywhere. And when you have a situation like that, you have to pick that fighter, so I'm going with Gilbert Burns to take it.
Now, Joe, before we flip this over to you, I got two questions for you. One has been sitting here for a while, and one popped in this second. And they're going to – if you don't know or can't tell, Joe is out at International Fight Week. I think you're going to go to the tough card, correct?
Yes.
Good question, by the way.
So we'll start with the question from Paul Rodriguez. Sanko, Olivi, or Pierce? And I feel like we've had this question before.
I am such a huge Laura Sanko fan, so I have to go with Laura Sanko. Look, nothing Oliveri, nothing wrong there, but just like sense of humor combination looks, give me Laura Sanko.
And because you're out there, and I think I know the answer to this because I saw some of your tweets earlier. Nancy, I'm gonna go with Nancy. MMA one asks ribeye, fillet, tomahawk, or flank.
I had a Wagyu 7X premium filet.
Oh, dear God. And off the heels of that, Hooker or Burns?
Okay, so I wonder if I said Hooker gets taken down, is that politically correct? Anyway, I am going to
–
I guess in Vegas it is.
Right, yeah.
I am going to I'm going to complete the trifecta here, as boring as it might be, and go with Gilbert Burns. Honestly, look, I think Hooker is a fine fighter. None of his wins either impressed me due to the nature of his opponents. Like, yes, okay, he beat the living shit out of Jim Miller, who I was actually at that fight in New Jersey. And yes, he dominated Jim Miller. But I mean, look, he had trouble with Jason Knight. And I think Jason Knight has since been exposed. I like Burns a lot more than I like Knight. My one concern with Burns is gas tank. I think the longer this fight goes, if Hooker can extend this fight, I think he has a chance to squeak out a decision. So I would go Burns by finish or Hooker by decision. But my pick is Burns.
Next up, Curtis Melender, 8,700, taking on Max Payne Griffin, 7,500. This is a really interesting fight for me. It's one I have been going back and forth on because Melender's young, he's tall, he's got a lot of range. Max Griffin, though, he keeps proving everyone wrong. He's a very smart fighter, can fight to a game plan, he's a tough guy. I think Melender is just a little too physical here. He's going to be able to use his range. But if Griffin can find a way to get inside, you know, Melender doesn't look the best when he's... I'm taking Curtis Melender, but I am not very confident at all. I've flip-flopped a few times in this fight. Joe, you got any way to bring me a little clarity on Melender and Max Griffin?
Probably not. I mean, Melender's fight IQ concerns me a little bit, but I do like him here against Griffin. I mean, it's a close fight, but I think I don't know if I'd touch this in cash, but I think Melender makes a fine GPP play for the finish. I think he's got a reasonably high ceiling. You know, Griffin is tough though. So it's not a super confident pick, but I do, if I'm putting together a lineup of guys who could potentially get finishes, I would put Melender on that team.
Chris, what do you got for us?
Yeah. I mean, they could potentially both get finishes. So as I'm concerned, I do think it's really interesting. Every time we have a tall fighter against a shorter fighter who likes to march you down and sort of brawl, that interests me because I think, well, that's how you beat tall fighters generally, right? But I also think that Melender, like you said, he's going to keep distance well. You know, he's got those kicks. He uses punches well at range. He keeps his range while punching. He doesn't smother himself, which I like, which is a trap that a lot of tall guys fall into. Do I think Melender can get overwhelmed here and he can get out-pressured by Griffin? I do. But ultimately, I think that the taller, more, you know, the more technique-driven fighter who's got, you know, the more varied attacks and the deeper offensive game is going to take it home. So I'm going to take Melender here.
All right, next up, we got Lando Venata, 9,000, taking on Dracar Close at 7,200. The more I look into this fight, the more I find myself even more confident in Lando Venata. And I have not been on his bandwagon a bunch in his UFC tenure. He's been in there with better guys than Dracar Close. I don't think Dracar comes off as someone who wants to stand and bang. And if he does that with Venata, I think he's going to get knocked out. I think we saw Venata, he puts a pace on guys that even he can't keep up with sometimes. And I don't think Dracar is going to be any different. Bobby Green, he nearly stopped him and knocked down. He had 4 takedowns in that fight. It was a draw, but he nearly got a first round finish. He's been in there against Tamer, who is going to be a different style of fight. Yeah, crazy knockout against Mac Desi, and then, you know, with Tony Ferguson, who he knocked down. I just think the pace is going to be too much for Dracar Close. He's finally going to get someone to stand and trade with him, but I don't think he really wants it to be Lando Venata. I like Venata a bunch in this spot. Chris?
Yeah, my problem with Lando Venata has been, you know, a lot of guys who rely too much on their head movement, which I think is Venata's problem. Venata's problem, that is, he keeps his hands very low and he tries to just duck out of the way of every shot. And eventually, you're going to get tagged up when you do that. And Venata, that happens to him almost without fail in every fight. I just think that Close is going to be probably the more athletic guy, probably a bit quicker. I think he'll be able to use his wrestling to sort of disrupt, much like the way Tamer did. And, I just think that, I like Lando. I like his kicking attacks. I like, you know, the pressure he brings, of course, as you mentioned. But I just think that at this stage in their respective careers, Close is the more put together young fighter prospect, whatever you want to say. So I'm going to take Dracar Close here.
Joe, what do you got?
Yup. Okay. Give me Groovy here. For a lot of the reasons you mentioned, Sean, Wani's fought better competition. I believe in every single one of his fights, he's gotten a performance bonus. I think he has a clear standing advantage over Dracar Close. I think he's got him in hand speed. I think he has him in technique. Close's one weapon is his wrestling. And he's not a young fighter. close. I mean, he's been kicking around for a while. I know he trains at MMA Lab, but I will take Groovy here. I do not know that I like this in cash, but again, this is another one of those fights where I would be tempted to put Lando in GPP lineups that I'm building with guys who could potentially get finishes.
Next up, if Mike, you know what, if anybody can't hear me, I apologize, and I guess it won't matter, but my connection's jumping around a little bit. You guys hear me all right?
Yeah, you cut a little bit, but we can understand you. You're good.
My screen is actually totally frozen. I can just hear you. What's the next fight, guys? Anybody got it pulled up?
Let's see. It is... It is Rafael Assuncao and versus Rob Font. Assuncao can be had for $9,100, and Font can be had for $7,100. So, Sean, I guess I'll throw it to you first, since we're going.
We will do that for one fight. My screen is frozen, but I can see everyone. So,
all right. Let's go in the opposite direction, Sean. What do you think
on this fight? I'm picking Assuncao. I'm looking forward to Font fighting, but Assuncao, he's just too good technically. The problem is he's garbage for DK. So in the videos I do on my YouTube page, it's drafting specific picks, and I make a point of that because this is a perfect example. Assuncao is my pick to win the fight. He's a dog shit play on DraftKings. I'll never roster him in cash. I may have a sprinkle in GPP, but I'll have more Font for the potential upside because Assuncao keeps getting older. The cliff is coming. I'll take Assuncao to win because I just think he's too good and have a typical point fight. But for DraftKings, it's dog or pass.
Joe?
I will take me some Rob Font here. I like him at 7.1K. I think he's a better DK play. I think that Assuncao, especially at his price, has got a very limited ceiling. I'm going to have way more Font in my mass entry lineups. I also think that Font is not the worst play in the world in cash simply because Assuncao does not generally get finishes. I mean, Matt Lopez is a weak chinned fighter. That was a finish. It was a nice finish, but, I think Font is fairly safe in cash if you want to go that way.
All right. I am back and ready to roll. Chris, who you got? Assuncao or Font?
All right, now that order has been restored, I think I'm going to take Rob Font here as well. I've been kind of flip-flopping on this, but I like Rob Font quite a bit. He's got a really hard stinging jab, which I love about fighters who have that in MMA. Not too many do. He throws in combination. I think he's got good hand speed. I think he uses his range well. And I think what can happen here is, as you said, Assuncao really tends to get into these slow-paced fights. And I think if Rob Font can come forward and dictate the pace, as he has done in the past, I think he can really shut down a lot of Assuncao's game here. I think this can be sort of a coming out party of sorts. For Font, I think he's got the skills to do it, and I'm going to take him as a dog player.
All right, and I'm back just in time for a really interesting fight. Paulo Borjachina Costa, 9,400, taking on Uriah Hall, 6,800. Rebook of this fight that was canceled after Hall had that really scary weight-cutting incident where he fainted, was rushed to the hospital. They rebook it, and he still should get mauled here. My issue is that Uriah Hall striking on a good day is legit. He is live in GPP because he is the cheapest fighter on the card and can get a knockout. But Costa should just maul him. I'm a little worried about Costa going deep into a fight because he's only beaten Gareth McClellan, Oluwole Bamboje, and Johnny Hendricks. And Johnny Hendricks, who was mentally defeated. So I'm a little worried about Paulo Costa. But again, Uriah Hall on the downswing probably fits in with those names pretty well. So I'll take Costa here, but I'm not a full fade on Hall and GPPs. Then we start with Chris for this one.
Yeah, I love this fight. I think it's just one of those fights where you throw it up in the air and you say, well, what's going to happen here. I think that Hall is going to be a pretty popular dog play, and there's good enough reasons for that, as you alluded to. We haven't really seen him go deep into fights, but even more than that, he was getting a little tired in that Bamboje fight, just for the pace Bamboje was keeping. And he hasn't had a ton of cage time in the other two fights. He hasn't had to work really hard in either of those fights. So, you know, it's really hard to say with confidence he's going to come out and start Hall, who, look, I mean, I have the same problem with Uriah Hall as everybody, where sometimes he can just look defeated and give up the way he did in the second Musashi fight. But then, you know, you have a fight like his last fight against Jocko, where he looked done and dusted in the first 2 minutes, and then actually comes back and wins that fight with a stoppage, no less. And, you know, I really think he was able to showcase an underrated aspect of his game that we don't get to see a lot, which is his ground and pound. I think he's got really vicious ground and pound. I think if he gets a chance to use it, it could really be an equalizer in this fight. But Paulo Costa, you know, he's the big prospect for a reason. He's got power. He's quick. He can wrestle a little bit for a Brazilian guy. You know, so who am I picking to win this fight? I think it's up in the air. I think it's a little hard to trust Costa at the price. And I'm going to have a pretty equal weight to this fight, most likely.
Ooh, I think I'll have much more Costa than Hall. Just to be clear, I just don't think he's a fade. Joe, how about you?
Wow. Give me Rico Suave here. I will take him. I like him better in cash. You know, I think there's some risk in GPPs because I'm not sure how high his ceiling is. But I do think Rico is a fairly reasonable cash play if you could work him in your lineup. Yeah, so give me Rico. Play him in cash.
All right, next up, a fight that I want to be really clear on, because and some people aren't going to listen to me. And it, you know what? If you go against what I'm about to say, best of luck to you. I can't advise it. Gokhan Saki, 8,400, taking on Khalil Roundtree Jr., 7,800. And the advice I was alluding to, do not play this fight in cash. If you do, you are out of your freaking mind. And I'm going to leave it at that. Somebody suggested stacking this fight. I wouldn't do that either. While I get it, it's likely to be a finish. They could end up staring at each other for a round. Roundtree also could come in with the grappling game plan, which who the hell knows? He's the one susceptible to grappling in his career. But Saki is a kickboxer who was in trouble against Henrique da Silva. Listen, I this is a GPP fight. I'm pretty much going to go all in 50-50 on it. It's how I have it right now. The fight picked, though, I'm going to keep banging this drum, and it's not with any kind of real venom I say it, but Gokhan Saki's a kickboxer. He's fighting mixed martial arts. I know Roundtree's a one-dimensional mixed martial arts fighter. That's the way my lean is going to be every time. So I'm going to take Roundtree. Keeping in mind, I'll have plenty of Saki in GPPs. Joe, how are you approaching this fight?
Give me the Turkish Mike Tyson here. I am not a big fan of Roundtree. I think his game is so one-dimensional. You know, you heard about his improved focus in his last fight and how he didn't have his typical persona where he was just so happy and friendly and was really, you know, focused and tight, and he looked like shit. So give me the Turkish Mike Tyson here by finish. I don't think this fight goes to decision, which is why it is a good GPP fight, but I'm also with you there. I don't like this in cash at all. I don't think this should be stacked. But give me the Turkish Mike Tyson by finish.
Chris, what do you got?
All right, well, Joe's going to have to be the odd man out once again, because I'm taking Roundtree here. I have such a bad feeling about
Saki. I just want to interject. He's very rarely the odd man out. It's usually you. And I'm not all in on Roundtree trying to paint me into this corner. Holy crap.
Come on, man. Band of brothers. Well, no. No, neither am I.
You still haven't earned me back.
Oh, I'll get there. But no, look, I'm not here to tell you that I'm very comfortable with Roundtree, but I just, I don't know, man. Enrique da Silva was brought in as like a showcase fight, and he almost got finished. And he almost got finished because, one, he doesn't know how to fight in the clinch, which is expected because he's a kickboxer. And two, he had absolutely no gas tank left after about 3 minutes, which is, I believe, your standard kickboxing round. So, I'm not here to tell you that Roundtree has the best gas tank either, but if he can get in close and stay out of range of those, you know, deadly fast hands and deadly hooks like the one that put out da Silva when he was winning the fight, I still can't understand that decision. But especially since it handed him his walking papers, that's a rough one. But I just think that if Roundtree has any semblance of following a game plan at all, he can win this fight. If he doesn't, he's going to get knocked out. But as for who I pick to win, I'm going to take some Roundtree here in GPPs.
Next up, Michael Maverick Chiesa, 8,600, taking on Anthony Showtime Pettis at 7,600. Both guys probably actually winding down their careers. The more I hear from Chiesa in interviews, the more I don't like. But I'm still picking him because Pettis can't stop a takedown. We've seen Chiesa sub out, you know, guy after guy. I can't bring myself to pick Anthony Pettis. His striking is probably a little better than Chiesa's. It's that takedown defense. And I know he's got a good guard. It's just Chiesa's so heavy on top. I think eventually this fight gets to the ground and Chiesa gets a win here. I was more confident playing him on DraftKings earlier in the week. I'm still picking him, but as my constructions go, I think there are better places to pay up or even pivot down some, but I'll still take Michael Chiesa. Chris?
Yeah, I have to confess, this might be a little bit of bias creeping in. I have a very hard time picking Sik Jitsu fighters to win any kind of high-level fight. And for those of you that don't know, Sik Jitsu is Michael Chiesa's gym, and the guy who runs it doesn't believe in checking leg kicks and doesn't believe you should be able to be hurt by body kicks. So I have a really hard time taking anybody who trains at that gym seriously. I think that, Beneil Dariush actually put that into practice, a good measure against Chiesa until, you know, Chiesa found the choke. But look, I think that Pettis, I think his striking is a good deal better. You know, I think he's going to be able to use those kicks to good effect. And I think if he gets taken down here, look, as I believe I said to you on Twitter, I think Pettis has had something like 27 fights, and he's never actually been subbed out. He had that weird Poirier thing where Poirier was on top, and then he hurt his ribs, and they stopped the fight. But as far as like a good and proper sub, rear naked choke, etc., that's never happened to him before. And two of Chiesa's three losses are by submission. So I trust Pettis is one of the few fighters in the UFC I trust to fight off his back, even through all the blood and all the sweat and all the crap. He almost locked up a triangle on Dustin Poirier twice. So I think if the fight gets there, he can at least use it to get back to his feet if he can't get a sub. I just think he's going to be able to implement his game in the way that he wants, and I think he's going to pick up the win here.
Joe, who you got?
Give me Michael Chiesa by finish.
You disappoint me, Joe.
Although, you know, look.
Not me.
Obviously, Pettis is you know, fought the tougher fighters overall. I wish they would have let that fight against that Chiesa fight against Kevin Lee play out. I would have liked to have seen that play out a little more because, you know, maybe he was going to go out, but I would have liked to have seen it play out anyway. But I like Michael Chiesa here. I mean, again, I think this is a tricky fight. I don't know what either fighter's upside is if this goes to decision. So tread cautiously. But again, Chiesa is one of those guys. If you're building that GPP lineup, I don't like this fight in cash, but if you're building that GPP lineup with fighters who could potentially get finishes, I think he's one that you might want to consider using in a mass entry GPP.
All right, next up, We have Mike Platinum Perry, 8,800, taking on Paul Felder at 7,400. Few things to note on this fight. This fight is two guys who lost their opponents. Mike Perry was supposed to fight Yancy Medeiros, and Paul Felder was supposed to fight James Vick. Medeiros pulls out with an injury, and James Vick gets bumped up to take on to fight at 227, right? The LA card, I believe. And these two are left opponentless, and now they're going to fight each other at 170. So Felder going up a weight class. He does have tough cuts. We'll get to that in a second. The other thing I wanted to mention is DraftKings priced this fight like Mike Perry was still taking on Yancy Medeiros. It is a major misprice. Mike Perry is 8,800. Paul Felder is at 7,400. And Paul Felder is a minus 155 favorite. So massive, massive, massive line value. God, I hate to say it. It's almost a free square in cash, but it's hard for me because I'm actually going to pick Mike Perry to win this fight.
Oh, goodness.
Mike Perry, and that's why it's a really interesting GPP play because everyone's going to be on Felder. Felder, the longer these fights goes, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to hang in there with Mike Perry as this gets dragged into deep water. I don't think he's going to knock out Mike Perry. Perry withstood punches from Santiago Ponzinibbio, a 170-er. Felder is knocking out guys like, you know, Stevie Ray. He lost to Francisco Trinaldo. I don't remember Ricci's first name, but Ricci. You know, that's the kind of guy Felder is beating. Josh Berkman, Darren Cruikshank. He's got a loss to Ross Pearson. Like, in terms of quality competition, Perry has the better competition.
Felder beat the Bronx.
He beat DuBronx, but everyone beats DuBronx once you get past the sub. Felder withstood a sub for 3 minutes. Second round, DuBronx does what DuBronx did and quit. Mike Perry lost to Max Griffin, but he went 3 rounds with Ponzinibbio, knocked out Ellenberger. I think the size is going to be an issue in this fight. I know Perry is smaller, stockier, and the bigger build, but I don't think Felder's going to be able to bully him. I actually think Perry is going to push forward and cause some issues with his pressure. Felder, I think it's going to get uncomfortable by the pressure of Mike Perry. I'm going to take Mike Perry to win. I'm still debating playing Felder in cash. I wish the prices were flipped, and I would love Mike Perry on DraftKings if he was the one who was 7,400. But the pricing, it makes things a lot harder. So for what it's worth, I like Mike Perry to win this fight. Joe, you chimed in. I feel like you disagree with me, so let's hear it.
Now, look, I mean, I like Felder here. Obviously, great value on DraftKings. Aside from that, there's a bunch of narratives surrounding Mike Perry. You know, one of them is going to Jackson Wink. Although from what I heard, Jackson Wink, no one really worked with him for this camp. He essentially did his own thing at Jackson Wink, had a bad breakup, apparently did 100 shots of tequila with John Jones, has been seen up and down the strip partying. Look, I like his that he's violence incarnate, but I think that Felder will likely be more prepared, and not having to make that weight cut should pay dividends. I am going with Paul Felder.
Chris, break the tie.
Emphatically with Paul Felder for me. I just – look, Mike Perry is just – to me, this is just different levels of striking. Mike Perry, the reason why he lost that fight to Max Griffin, which is a fight I thought he was going to win – full disclosure, was because Max Griffin just said, okay, when you march me down, I'm going to angle off and I'm going to throw a shot. And Mike Perry, like, had no idea how to deal with that. Like, he was stunned that somebody just didn't back straight up into the fence when he walked him down. It was kind of, I think we all assumed that Mike Perry was sort of a meat and potatoes brawler pressure striker, but I didn't know it was to that extent where all you had to do was circle off a little bit and you could totally throw him off his game. So that really, you know, makes me think that we're dealing with two levels of strikers here. And look, Mike Perry couldn't handle Alan Joban with his kicking game and levels of striking. So I think Paul Felder is a notch above that. And I think that, look, Paul Felder has weapons for that pressure. You brought up the Ricci fight, the beautiful step and elbow that he used to hurt Ricci and then finish that fight. I think that Felder is the smarter fighter without question. I think he's the deeper technical fighter. My only concern here, and not really concern, but maybe just a disappointment, is that he's going to be so heavily owned because the price is clearly off. But I think, like, I think if you're playing cash, you kind of have to have him because everybody's going to have him. So if you don't have him, you're behind the eight ball, because I do think he wins pretty convincingly.
We've said that about Eric Shelton, and there was another fight recently. The line value has burned some people. So
I guess that lets you know how much I believe in Mike Perry, I guess. But I'm going to take Paul Felder pretty comfortably here. I don't think Mike Perry's going to knock him out, and if Mike Perry can't knock you out, I don't think he beats you in a fight. So there you go.
I'm really liking Perry more and more for GPP, just because everyone's on that wavelength and he's so cheap as Felder. So for what it's worth, I like Perry and GPP. Francis Ngannou, 9,300, taking on Derek the Black Beast Lewis at 6,900. Give me Francis, but if this goes past the first round, I'm going to be nervous. I wouldn't full on Derek Lewis. I think this is a really good week to use both of the lowest priced fighters, both Hall and Lewis, just a little bit, open up some salary space, and one of them could very well come through and win you a GPP. Don't go nuts, because they are clear punts. I like in Ngannou here, probably to get a quick finish. We've seen Lewis is habitually a slow starter, so I think Ngannou will put him away in the first round. I am a little worried of the price tag, that they'll stand and look at each other for the first round, and Ngannou will start with a second round finish, but I still like him to win pretty comfortably. Chris?
Yeah, this is sort of a, I don't want to say a toss up fight, but it's too heavyweight.
No. I think I gave it good justice, like 10% Derek Lewis and move on.
Oh my God. All I mean to say is that look. Either fighter can knock out the other. Just to be clear, the pick is Ngannou, Joe, so calm down. But I just want to actually, to that end, because I've been seeing this a lot, where like Ngannou has no gas tank, or he can be, if you wrestle him or you know, get physical with him, he's going to just attrit very easily. And I'm not really sure that's true. First of all, I mean, Stipe had to, you know, really tried to hold him down all five rounds, basically. Like, he never stopped trying to get to his feet. And I think it was either round three or round four. I think Stipe thought, okay, this guy is tired, I'm going to go in for the kill, and still got cracked with a hard shot and had to go back to wrestle. So can Ngannou get tired? Yes. But can he fight while he's tired? I think he can. I don't necessarily buy that he's going to just, you know, turn into, you know, just – this piece of flubber in the cage, because, you know, you lean on him a little bit. And, you know, Derek Lewis doesn't wrestle anyway. So his wrestling is more like, you know, I catch your kick and then fall into you and you fall over and now I'm on top of you. But I have to like Ngannou here, even though I think Derek Lewis gets a bad rap. I think I like how opportunistic he is in the cage. He gets his moment, even if it's a small moment, like we saw in the Marchian Held fight, and he takes it, and he can finish the fight in an instant, and I think he deserves credit for that. But I think Ngannou is more technical. I think he's going to use his range better. I actually think he's going to have the better gas tank here, but I guess time will tell. I just think he's the better fighter, and I think Lewis could give him a scare here, but ultimately I think that Ngannou is going to get a stoppage.
Joe, how quickly do you think this one ends?
Wow, way more analysis than I think this fight needed. There is a five dimes prop, 150-1, that I put $100 on, that Derek Lewis shits himself in the octagon. I am on that prop for $100.
You only got 5-1 on that?
150-1.
Oh, I was going to say. You must really have a problem.
For $100 that Derek Lewis shits himself in the octagon. So I am going to go Francis Ngannou by technical knockout due to a Derek Lewis inappropriate bowel movement in the octagon.
Why would you throw away $100 like that? Why?
Ngannou in cash, Ngannou in GPP. Closest thing to a free square on this card.
And on that note, we're going to move to the main event. Stipe Miocic, 8,900, the reigning defending heavyweight champion. Moving on. I can't even talk. I can't believe you bet that. If that hits, you are buying me a Wagyu steak.
15K.
Jeez. Taking on Daniel DC Cormier, the reigning but not defending light heavyweight champ as he seeks to become the second ever champ. In the UFC, probably the first one to defend a belt if he were to become a double champ. He's at 7,300 if I didn't mention, and to me this fight is just lined wrong. I know Miocic has the power advantage. He probably is the better boxer, although I'm not 100% convinced of that. I'm not convinced of it. DC's wrestling is better. It just is. It's Olympic level wrestling. The D1 wrestling is different. I'm not, and we've seen DC deal with guys the size of Stipe. There's only going to be, 15 pound, discrepancy in this fight, which for heavyweight isn't massive. We've seen DC slam guys around, like Josh Barnett, and other heavyweights when he fought a heavyweight. Granted, that wasn't Strikeforce, just that he can manhandle that much weight. I think just. The fight should be lined closer, and everyone's on Stipe. I like DC to get this done. I think his wrestling is enough. I'm a little worried about the power and of Miocic with the chin of DC, but I think he uses his wrestling and manages to pull this out. Assuming he's not hurt and this fight still happens, give me the underdog and Daniel DC Cormier. For cash, I'm probably going to stack this fight, and in GPPs, I am going to have a fair share of Miocic as well. I do think the winner of this fight is on the optimal lineup. So this fight and Saki Roundtree are my two nearly all-ins for GPP. Joe, I got you making noises during my little analysis, which I always like. I like to upset you a little, especially after you talk about Derek Lewis shitting himself. So what do you got, Miocic or Cormier? Champ time.
Look, you're going to have a 39-year-old limping because he fell tripped
over. Right.
We're going to have a 39-year-old limping DC who is at a severe height and reach disadvantage. What I was chuckling about is that you think Cormier is even remotely in the same league as Stipe boxing. That's what I was, ha-haing about. Look, I so much respect for Miocic after how he beat Ngannou. I mean, and if you look at Miocic's face, he took some punches from Ngannou. I mean, you see his face after that fight, and he ended up wearing him out, taking him down. I don't think Cormier has got anything striking wise like Ngannou. Yes, he's got his wrestling to fall back on, assuming he can walk after that fall and he's not limping around the octagon. I like Miocic here. I don't know that I would bet -270. On this fight, but I do like him, and I would take a stab at an inside the distance prop on Miocic.
Chris, what do you got for our main event?
Yeah, I agree that the fight is closer than the line, but DC always scares me when he goes up against good strikers, because he has that move where he just comes forward and dips his head and sort of leaves himself open. I mean, we saw Volkan Oezdemir kind of tag him up before he got his wrestling going and brought it to the ground. So I think DC puts a little bit more faith in his striking than is warranted. And I think if he does that here, it could really hurt. I mean, we're talking about a guy who knocked out Radum going backwards. I think that Stipe has the power to end this fight pretty much whenever. It's going to be interesting to me to see what the wrestling looks like from Cormier, because I can't quite recall the last time we saw somebody try to take Stipe Miocic down with regularity. So that's going to be interesting to me. But I think that if DC can't get his wrestling game going, I think that and it'll be interesting to see what kind of defensive wrestling Stipe has. But if he can't get his wrestling game going, I think he's going to be in big trouble here. I think he can get boxed up pretty easily here. And that's kind of what I'm expecting to happen. And it wouldn't surprise me if Stipe got maybe a second or third round finish.
So that's what we got for in terms of fight breakdowns. Let's move on to our hot takes for this card. I feel like we have quite a few to choose from. Anyone have one ready while I'm scrolling through? Are you ready with their hot take?
No, not yet.
All right, so then I guess I'll go. You know what? Let's the hottest of take. I think the massive line value trend that we've seen over the last few months continues to burn people, and Mike Perry knocks out Paul Felder.
Wow.
You always have the best ones. This is your segment. You come to life in this segment, Mike.
Yes, he does. You got one, you got one, Chris?
Well, I'm surprised that you don't you have your hot take, Joe. You have a hot, smelly take, and
yes, my hot take is Lewis shits himself in the octagon.
That's it.
That's my hot take.
My hot take is that we see a vintage Anthony Pettis triangle, and he subs out Michael Chiesa for the win.
Wow, that is a hot take.
It's definitely a hot take call on Method of Victory. So, again, guys, make sure you are subscribed to this podcast, RotoWire MMA. Follow all of us on Twitter. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free. Check out all their usually paid content for 10 days, no credit card required. Enjoy our back-to-back two nights of fights. Joe, enjoy your what I'm assuming is cage side seats for the tough finale. Everybody, good luck in your contest. We will see you next time.
Boise.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.